everybody, and welcome back to Fueling Forward Friday. I'm your host, Maddie Alm, registered dietitian and former elite runner. Today's episode, I will be answering questions you all have submitted to me beforehand. And if you would like to submit any questions in the future, you can do so at my website, www.fuelingforward.com, under the podcast tab, or you can send me an email at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. This week is the Q&A episode, so I'm really excited to be reading some questions that you guys have submitted. All right, so let's see. Starting out, happy Friday, everybody. Hope everyone's having a good week. I feel like this week has been a little crazy. I don't know if anyone else feels that way. But just a couple things that I wanted to kind of share that came to my mind earlier this week. The first one is I have been spending more time than I would like to on social media. I think one of my goals is to cut back a little bit on scroll time. My husband and I call it getting in a scrolly hole where you just spend hours scrolling through things. It's not a good habit to get into, but one of the things that came up on my feed this week was an ad for a steel cutting board, and it said something about now you can get rid of your wooden and plastic cutting boards, and I was like, wood cutting boards. Like, didn't we just all get rid of our plastic cutting boards so that we could all get wood cutting boards so that we weren't getting microplastics in our food? And now you're telling me that wood cutting boards are toxic? Man, I swear, I cannot keep up with this, like, toxic culture, for lack of a better term. I feel like there's so many things out there that I keep seeing come up about, don't eat this, don't have this, watch out for this, and you just can't win. I feel like there's no possible way for you to avoid all these things everyone is saying is toxic. So if you are like me and you're feeling overwhelmed with all of the anti-toxin posts that are out there, just know that a lot of times those posts are being posted by people who are selling something, and they're going to benefit from you saying, oh my gosh, you're right, I need to get rid of all of my wood cutting boards now. So anyway, I just wanted to quickly throw that out there just because I feel like I personally have been inundated with ads and information about avoiding all these things that are toxic. So obviously, there's like different degrees of exposure. There's a lot of different considerations. It depends on how good your body's detox systems are functioning. If you have, you know, a good mineral capacity, if your liver is functioning well, if you're drinking a lot of water, if you're eating well, if you're doing all those things, your body's pretty good at detoxing itself. You know, it's able to get rid of anything we're exposed to on a daily basis pretty well. Of course, there are situations where our body's ability to detoxify itself is slowed down, or maybe we're getting exposed to too many things and our body can't keep up and it's accumulating. You know, of course, there's different situations and places where that's appropriate. And, you know, I do think like cutting back on plastic exposure in food, that's personally something I'm wanting to work towards this year. But that doesn't mean everybody needs to be doing that. And it doesn't mean that you can't ever use anything plastic. And I think that avoiding that kind of black and white, all or nothing approach is really important, because one thing we do know is that stress does wreak havoc on our health. And if we're constantly stressed about all this toxin exposure, all these other things, well, that's probably more harmful than actually being exposed to the toxins themselves. And again, I'm not saying that's always the case. Of course, there's situations where, you know, exposure to certain things can cause health problems. But anyway, all that to say, I'm not getting rid of my wood cutting boards for a steel cutting board. I'm keeping my nice new wood cutting board. So anyway, just wanted to throw that out there. Last thing with social media there, don't forget that you can unfollow and you can mute accounts that are triggering. If you're noticing that there's somebody who's always posting things that show up on your timeline that make you question all of your life choices, unfollow them, mute them. You know, if they're offended, if you unfollow them, that's kind of their problem. If you're doing it for your own health, your own happiness comes first. So just know that you have control in theory over some of the things that are coming up on your timeline, and you can change the algorithm. I finally have mine right where I want it, which is exclusively dog videos and fun recipes. So you can get there too, but that's not to say ads don't come up, which I know can be triggering, but Anyway, you can do a social media cleanup. That is something I do encourage athletes to do, especially if you're constantly feeling triggered by things out there. All right, yeah, so that's a fun little tangent on my thoughts for this Friday. Last little thoughts I had to wrap up before I start getting into questions. It's funny because I was talking to a client this week about race day photos and how triggering race day photos can be. And like, I don't know if all race day photographers have a pact to exclusively take photos at your worst angle. If they all were like, yeah, no, we need to lay as low as possible on the ground. We need to make sure that we capture their shot only on a downstep when everything's just being pulled towards the ground by gravity. You know, the worse pain on their face, the better. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is about race day photos, but I think we've all been personally victimized by them. So if you find yourself struggling, just keep in mind, race day photos especially are not an accurate representation of your body. I mean, somebody could be like the leanest, fittest person, and I promise you, there's still a horrible picture of them racing. It's just how it goes. I don't make the rules. That's just how the universe works. I probably only have a handful of decent race day pictures of myself. And sometimes I feel bad posting them because there's somebody in the background who's caught in like the worst downstep. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not just you. It isn't you. There's nothing wrong with you. That's just what happens with race day photos. So I would say if you're somebody who tends to be triggered by race day photos, you don't need to look at them, or maybe you just have somebody else out there who's taking race day photos of you and they're only sending you the ones that were in, you know, an upstep where you're smiling and you're looking great. Maybe 1 mile into the race instead of the very, very end of the race. But yeah, that was another just thing that came to my mind, was talking to a couple people this week about race day photos being really triggering. And yeah, that's just summarizes race day photos in a nutshell. Why do we do it? I don't know. The other thing from my last Q&A podcast recording, I asked people to write in and share something that a coach told them that has stuck with them, something about nutrition that a coach has said maybe in passing. I got a lot of great responses. All of them are good, but I wanted to share a couple of the most common responses that I saw come in. The first one, this one I saw a couple of times: if we were hungry, we were told to eat fruit or a salad instead of a meal. So many questions, so many thoughts there. Somebody else said that they had a coach that changed their order at a restaurant the night before a race from like a pasta dish to something else. And I've also had someone else tell me about a coach who would take away the bread basket at dinner. Not okay. Coaches that have told their athletes to track or count calories and not go over a certain number. And now that athlete here 20 years later still has a hard time not counting calories or getting that number out of their head. That's a pretty common response that I saw. Coaches telling them not to eat anything with sugar, stop eating donuts, stop eating dessert, basically stop eating things that bring you joy. No one needs to be told that. Somebody said their coach told them all to compare their body now to how it looked last season, you know, coming off of like one season going into another. When they met back for the first practice, their coach asked them to compare how their body looked. So many thoughts with that one. And then another one of probably the most common experiences I had people share was coaches saying things like, weighing more is like running with a weight vest on or with dumbbells in your hand. And yeah, of course, if you put a weight vest on, it's going to feel harder to run. That doesn't mean that if you were to weigh more, it would be harder to run, especially if you're somebody who's underfueled. That is not a really good comparison. That's just kind of like an easy low-hanging fruit for coaches to pick on as an easy explanation of why being lighter is faster. But as we've talked about, that's not how that works. That is not a one-to-one ratio. Being lighter does not make you faster. Being underfueled does not make you faster, even if that means you're lighter. There are a lot of things to consider here. I think the bottom line, the biggest thing to take away from these athletes' experiences, is that coaches can say harmful things without meaning to. And that goes for parents too. I've worked with a lot of athletes whose parents haven't realized that they've said something about themselves, about their own body, in front of their athlete that really impacted how that athlete then looked at their own body. You know, I had one young runner whose mom would always say, oh, we're going on a beach trip. I can't eat that bread this week. And so that athlete was like, oh, well, do I need to worry about eating bread if I'm going to be going on a beach trip? And, you know, the mom wasn't thinking twice about it. She wasn't thinking about how that athlete might interpret it because she wasn't talking to their, you know, her daughter. But that's how they hear it. So I think that these experiences are just really good reminders to parents, to coaches, to teammates. Making comments to other people about food choices, about their body, stick with people. And even if you're making it about your own body, not about somebody else, you don't know how someone else is going to feel as a result of that comment. So in general, I just think a good takeaway here is don't comment about other people's food choices, don't comment about other people's bodies, and just try really hard to, you know, especially if you are around younger athletes, make it about things besides body and food. You know, how did you feel today? Did you feel strong? You looked like you had a lot of energy. Instead of saying things like, wow, you're looking really lean, that's not going to be helpful. They're going to start associating being lean with being good. So just being really careful about our word choices around food and body, because you never know who's listening. One of my promises to the listeners of the Fueling Forward podcast is that I will never promote something unless I firmly believe in a brand and their product, have tried it myself, and feel like there is science to back it up. That's why I'm proud to partner with Momentous to bring you this episode. They invest in NSF certification, meaning every batch is tested for heavy metals, harmful additives, and label claim accuracy, and is the reason they're trusted by all 32 NFL teams and collegiate sports team dietitians all over the country. I personally use and love Momentous protein powder as a way to support my fueling and training goals. They also have a great post-workout recovery powder that has carbs and protein all in one. Not only does it taste great, but it actually blends well into things unlike other protein powders I've tried that taste gritty or chalky. Go to livemomentous.com and try it today at 20% off with code FUELINGFORWARD and start living on purpose. All right, so there's my little ramble to get into today's Q&A. So let's get into it. I'm just going to read a few questions here and answer them. So the first question I wanted to share, this says, I really resonated with what you talked about at the beginning of your last Q&A episode. I have really struggled with race day nerves and was wondering if you have any advice on how to overcome them. Thanks. That's such a great question. And I think the first thing that I would say, is that I personally also struggled with nerves, and being a good runner, being a great runner, being one of the best runners doesn't mean that your nerves go away. Your nerves never go away. You're always going to be nervous for races, and that's okay. You know, I was always told that if I was nervous, that meant I cared, which obviously I did, which we all do, and that's okay. That's just a normal feeling that comes with putting something that you care about and have worked really hard for on the line. And that doesn't mean it's a bad thing. I think that's something I really struggled with in high school, was automatically assuming that nerves were bad or that they were going to negatively affect me. And this is something I personally have worked on a lot in therapy and things like that, where you can have an emotion and it doesn't mean that it has to dictate an outcome. So you can feel nervous, but that doesn't have to be good or bad. That can just be a neutral emotion that you acknowledge and understand that it's there, but that doesn't mean that it's going to have any impact on the outcome of your race. So going into your race, just saying, hey, I feel nervous. Great. You know, that's it. You feel nervous and that's okay. And you can also feel excited and you can feel multiple things at the same time. So just recognizing nerves, that they're an emotion, that it's not a bad thing. It just is what it is. The other thing that I used to really struggle with that I think contributed a lot to my race day nerves was comparing myself to everyone on the start line before the race even started. So I was that kid in high school, I would go deep into like mile split and look at everyone's PRs who was going to be in my heat. I would go through like all, you know, 16 girls that were going to be on the start line with me. I would go through their PRs and be like, oh my gosh, she's way faster, they're way faster. And I was kind of deciding the outcome of the race before the race even started. I already had decided in my mind that these, you know, five people were already going to be faster than me, so I had no business running up with them. And that put a big limitation on my race, especially when things got hard in the race. It sort of gave me an excuse to drop back. And I would be like, oh, there's that girl whose PR is 10 seconds faster than mine. No wonder this is so hard. I'm running with her. I should drop back and make it easier. And I think something I learned the hard way with that is running slower doesn't make the race feel any better. You're just less happy with your time. It's always going to be hard. The race is always going to feel hard. But you don't know when that runner ran their PR, what was going on. They might have been, you know, on the verge of getting injured. It might have been a year ago and they're in a totally different place right now. And as you know, if you've ever PR'd, sometimes it just pops off. Sometimes you just have a day. And it's rare to have a day where you're going to run a PR. And that's why, especially as you progress in the sport and you get better at racing and your training is better, PRs are harder to come by and they're a lot smaller. So just remembering too that like you don't know what was going on when that athlete PR'd. And that doesn't mean that you can't have one of those days yourself. I, you know, in high school, like I said, would kind of look through all the start times and decide where I'd finish. When I got to college, I was racing a lot of those same people from high school and I would beat them. And that really made me question, what if I had not limited myself in high school? What if I had just gotten to the start line without looking at everyone else's times and just raced to race? You know, I think that's something that with all the stats that are available, all the data, Strava, like it's so easy to go to a start line and kind of already decide where you're going to finish. So that would be a piece of advice I would give is don't analyze the field before the race starts, because that will affect your mental state going on to the start line. Another thing that I tried to tell myself is just, it's one day. You can't expect your absolute best one time out of a 365 day year. The chances that you're going to feel incredible, have the best day of your life at one day, you know, they're not super high, but that's also why you train. And so it's not impossible, but just reminding yourself that it's one day, just take the pressure off of that day. And if you can just show up ready to run, trusting your training, you know, just knowing that you're going to run your hardest and whatever that looks like on that day, that's okay. That just took the pressure off for me. Instead of saying, I have to run this certain time, I have to finish at this spot in the race. If I just went into the race and said, if I finish this race and I know I ran my hardest, I'm going to feel okay with the result, whatever that looks like. And every single time I went in with that mindset, I had a great race because I wasn't thinking about those other factors during the race, like, oh my gosh, I'm way off pace, I'm already struggling, I don't feel great, so I'm just going to kind of throw the towel in, you know. But yeah, I think just taking the pressure off of your race and saying it's one day, you're going to have more chances, there are more races coming up, even if they're not for a while. Don't put all that pressure on just that one day. And then the last thing I will say for race day nerves is practicing in practice. I think this is something that we as runners forget. It's a little different, obviously, than a soccer player who's out there practicing drills and shots on goal. And, you know, somebody who has more like a technical sport, practice is practicing, you know, drills and things for games. And in running, I think we just think of it as like, oh, I'm training, I'm running. But it is practice. You know, I think anytime we're doing a hard workout that is race pace or faster than race pace, we forget that we can practice how we want to be thinking in the race. This was something I worked on a ton post-collegiately when I trained with Team Boss, especially because I was one of the slower people on the team and I was always kind of getting gapped in workouts. It was a really good opportunity for me to work on my mindset and just say, okay, I'm going to try on this next rep to keep the gap the same or not let it get bigger or try to make the gap smaller or hang on for 100 meters longer or, you know, just find a way to reframe what a successful workout would look like. And staying engaged mentally, I think when I would really struggle in races was when I was all out and people were pulling away from me. I would kind of feel like sorry for myself almost and just be like, well, and I think subconsciously I would kind of give up. Like I didn't intentionally say like, I'm going to slow down and just like not go for it in this race. But I think there was some piece of me that was kind of like, this is too hard. I can't keep up with these people. And that's it. And so I would either have like a great race or I would have a terrible race. And I realized as time went on that there can be a middle ground. Like you can have an okay race. You can have a good race, not a great race. You can have a bad race, not a terrible race. Like there's less than just those two extremes if you learn how to practice the mental side of things in practice when you don't feel good. Because there's times in races where you feel terrible and it's so much harder to push yourself. But if you have practices where you don't feel great, that's a great opportunity to practice that mental piece. So I just really tried to find strategies to keep myself mentally engaged in workouts and pretend like I was practicing a race. And that really, really helped me when I had those similar sensations in races, then not panic and just find a new way to mentally tackle that hurdle. So those are a few of my practical tips for race day nerves. From a fueling standpoint, of course, because this is the Fueling Forward podcast, I just briefly want to say, if you struggle with eating on race day, a couple tips that I have, actually, this is good timing. I just posted on Instagram different schedules for like morning, evening, afternoon races, all that stuff. So if you have a race coming up and you're not sure how to time it, go check out that post. But I do talk about how I would recommend working backwards from your start time. So if your race is at, 6 p.m., you're going to warm up at 5. You want to eat something about 1 to 2 hours before your warm up. So that would be between 3 and 4. And then eat every 2 to 3 hours working backwards from there. So writing out your race day fueling schedule, like in the notes section in your phone or on a piece of paper, just helps take that off of your mind, reduces your mental load on race day. So you're not having to think about it. If you have a hard time eating, doing more liquids, so things like juices or smoothies or sports drinks, ways where it's easier to get in some carbs, especially even if you don't feel like eating, and then just doing your best, you know what I mean? Like if you are having a really hard time getting stuff down, do the best that you can, eat what sounds good. This is something I personally learned. I used to choke down oatmeal before every race because I thought that's what runners had to eat. I hated oatmeal. I did not enjoy it. And it was really hard for me to eat before my races because of the oatmeal. And I finally acknowledged that I'm not an oatmeal person. I gave myself permission to switch to something that I did enjoy, which was like a muffin or like those Kodiak cake pancake cups. I love those. Great for hotels too. Like a Clif Bar, a bagel, just something that I enjoyed more. Made it so much easier for me to eat before a race. So find something that you enjoy. And then just remember that if you're fueling well in the days and weeks leading up to your race, it's not a huge deal if race day isn't perfect. Of course, you want to make sure you're eating something, but getting something in, whatever that looks like, is better than not getting anything in. And if you've consistently fueled your body leading up to the race, that does give you a little bit of a cushion. So just a couple tips for fueling when it comes to race day nerves. All right, my next question says, hi, any recommendations or guidelines for fueling while increasing exercise and breastfeeding to stay healthy and maintain milk supply? I've actually gotten a couple questions about training and breastfeeding. I would say, first of all, something just an aside, breast milk is so cool. It's a dynamic organism, actually, that changes in response to the baby's saliva. So it can shift and change and add nutrients depending on what the baby needs, which is super cool. But if you are somebody who has struggled to breastfeed, who can't breastfeed, that is okay. I don't want you to feel shamed or like you're not a good mom or not doing a great job. Fed is best. It doesn't matter what that looks like. And it's okay if you didn't choose to breastfeed. So just an aside for any mom out there who's in that position. But if you are a new mom and you are postpartum, you're breastfeeding and you're training, your energy needs are incredibly, incredibly high. So general guidelines for breastfeeding moms is an additional 400 to 500 calories per day to support milk production. That is not including exercise. And a challenge that I see a lot for breastfeeding moms who are training is that they are also sort of trying to lose, quote unquote, baby weight. So they're training more. Maybe they're watching what they eat to try to lose that weight faster, and that really quickly depletes energy stores and puts you at risk for low energy availability and decreased milk supply. I know that body changes are stressful. I know that a lot of times part of training is to try to get back to quote unquote your old self, but this is not really the time or the way to do that. Guidelines actually say a healthy body change is 1 to 2 pounds per month postpartum at most. So it's a really slow process. And I know that can be hard. And so I do want to acknowledge that and just remind you that if this is a position that you're in, it takes time. And nourishing your body during this time is not only for you, but it's also for your baby. So just remembering that. And I would say some general things that are just additional needs for breastfeeding moms. Carbs and protein needs do go up. So trying to get additional carbs and protein in during the day. Getting plenty of healthy fats. This is really great for the baby's brain development. So, you know, avocado, nuts and seeds, fatty fish. You do want to be mindful of fish that are high in mercury, like tuna. So focusing on lower mercury fish like salmon is usually better here. Vitamins and minerals. So just eating a variety of foods. And this is something that we've talked about a couple times with, you know, the carb, color, and protein approach. If you're getting some variety, if you're getting all those nutrients in one meal, you're doing a great job. But that's also something that's important to remember is that your body is going to prioritize the baby. So if you don't have enough calcium for the baby's milk supply that it needs, your body will take calcium from your bones to give it to the baby. And that will ultimately result in a loss of bone density. So just remember that getting in those nutrients is not, you know, it's for both you and the baby to protect your baby, to protect your body. Something that I like to do with postpartum moms who are running is a mineral test to make sure that things look good. Most moms are super, super depleted in minerals just from giving to their baby all throughout pregnancy and during breastfeeding. So if you are struggling with that or not really sure how to get what you need, I do highly recommend seeking out a dietitian. There are postpartum and breastfeeding specific dietitians out there that would be really great resources if you're struggling. The last thing I would say is just staying hydrated. You need at minimum 100 ounces per day when you're breastfeeding, and that's not including activity. So if you're also training, if it's also hot out, you're going to need even more fluids than that. So just really focusing on hydration. There are also other products out there that can help support breast milk production, things like teas and lactation cookies. Again, you know, talking with your doctor or a lactation specialist about some of those options if you're struggling with milk supply. But really, first and foremost, just eating more, giving yourself permission to eat more, even if it feels hard in a new body. You're doing an amazing thing, so don't forget that. You're nourishing a life, and that is so much to your accomplishing in and of itself. Even if it feels like you didn't do anything else that day, you're doing a great job. Okay, next question. Hi, I am a 17-year-old junior in high school. For track, we need to bring a recovery drink. I like vitamin water, zero sugar. What is the difference if my recovery drink does not have sugar like traditional ones do? Am I missing out on benefits? From Alexa. Great question, Alexa. So I would say, first of all, I want to define what I mean by a recovery drink. And there's two things that we want to make sure we have in our post-training snack. The first is some type of protein. So we need to make sure that we're getting protein in when we're done with training, because that's going to help our body recover. Protein is going to help us rebuild and repair any damaged muscle cells. It's going to help us reinforce our immune system, which can be temporarily suppressed from training. And it's just generally going to help us bounce back from that workout a little bit better. So protein is the first thing. The second thing is a source of carbohydrates. And I tend to see athletes do one or the other. I don't often see athletes doing both. And we do need carbohydrates, especially endurance athletes, which would be any runner, because we've just depleted our energy stores and our body really needs us to refill what are called our muscle glycogen stores. That's how our body stores carbohydrates. That's our preferred source of fuel during training sessions. So our body really is depleted after using all of those stores. And the reason why we want to get something in as soon as we can after training is because our body is in the perfect state to take that fuel and put it exactly where it needs to go. We have the perfect hormone levels to put fuel exactly where we want it. Our heart rate's a little higher, which means that our blood is moving a little faster through our body and can deliver those nutrients a little quicker. So getting something in post-workout, ideally within an hour, is a good goal. And liquids are a great option, especially if you tend to not feel hungry post-run, because they will help you get carbs and protein. A lot of times if you don't feel hungry after a run, it's because your core temperature is too high. So getting cold liquids especially can help lower that, which can bring your appetite back. And then of course you do want to rehydrate and get electrolytes. And fun fact, milk actually has naturally occurring electrolytes that match that of a lot of electrolyte powders. So really great option. Like I've said this before and you'll hear me say it again, chocolate milk, great post-workout drink. So to what Alexa said about the vitamin water zero, the problem with the non-sugar drinks, there's not really anything in there that's going to help us recover. It's going to help us rehydrate, but there's no carbs, there's no protein, and a lot of times those non-sugar drinks have other nutrients in them that can be really irritating for our GI tract. So if you've noticed like the zero sugar things, they still taste sweet. The reason why they're no calorie or no sugar is because our body does not know how to process the sweeteners in there. And we don't have enough research on things like stevia and monk fruit and other, you know, sugar alcohols to know what their long-term impact might be. But we do know that things that don't get digested by our body sit in the GI tract and have to get fermented by our gut bacteria, which could alter our gut microbiome. And a lot of the way in which we recover and get nutrients is through our gut. So I would say just generally, I'm not a huge fan of sugar-free versions of drinks. Our body does know how to digest sugar. It knows what to do with it. Our body can use it. So I would prefer to see an athlete use a traditional Gatorade or vitamin water or something that actually has sugar in it, post-workout, during workout, pre-workout even, rather than those sugar alternatives. The other issue with just doing something like a vitamin water for post-run, like I said, is we don't have any protein. So that would be something you maybe would pair with, let's say, a protein bar. A good example would be something like a Clif Bar, a Kind protein bar, you know, Go Macro protein bar, RX bars. Those are some of my personal favorites to recommend to athletes. You could pair one of those with a sports drink that has carbs in it to get both your carbs and protein, and that would be a little bit better of an option than the vitamin water zero. So thanks for that question, Alexa. That was a great one. Okay, the next question on here, how long of a run do you typically recommend mid-run fueling for? Yeah, I get asked a lot about during run fueling. I think there's a lot of kind of conflicting information out there. It does depend on the athlete and what you're training for, but typically what I recommend in my practice is that you include some type of mid-run fuel if your run is 75 minutes or more. So this goes for any run. And I have some athletes who are training high enough mileage where an easy run is 80 minutes. And because it's classified as an easy run, I think a lot of us have a hard time maybe justifying taking something during that run. But remember, the whole idea behind a training block is stacking days. And things that interrupt training blocks are things like injuries and illnesses that can come from underfueling. So it's not that you can't get through a run without fuel. You can, and I'm sure you have, and we've all done it. But the problem is then you're much more depleted post-run. And a lot of times we're turning around and training 24 hours later or less. So let's say we went into that, you know, easy run at 75% fueled. We finished that run at 25% fueled. We think we refuel. Now we're up to 75% again. And then we have to go train again, but it's a harder workout. So now we're even lower. So we're just never getting to that 100% fueled and recovered if we're just not getting those energy stores back to where we want them. So a good way to prevent that extreme depletion is by avoiding using our energy stores in the first place. And that's where fueling before your run and then fueling during those longer runs can really help more than anything help with recovery. So I had a client meeting this week where we talked about that, and she was like, I could actually go to the grocery store after my long run. And I kept waiting for the soreness to hit from my Sunday long run on Monday and Tuesday, and it never did. And that's definitely a huge pro to adding some fuel during any 75-minute run or longer, just really that recovery piece. If you have a workout, I know it can be a little harder to incorporate fuel, but I would say the easiest way to do that would be to have something like a gel or energy chews in between your warm-up and the actual workout itself. And then depending on how long your cool-down is, you could even have another gel or some chews between the workout and the cool down. And then any type of longer run, I try to recommend bringing electrolytes with carbs in them. So something like Scratch or Tailwind or Morton, those are all really great options. Momentous has a great one as well. So those are some things that you can try out for during runs if you're just struggling to get anything in. That can be a good replacement or a starter point for somebody who's new to fueling. I will also say there's a lot of gel options out there. So when I tell an athlete to take a gel during a run, they automatically think of like goo, which is super thick and super sweet. Some athletes love it and that works really well for them and that's great. I personally do not do well with those kinds of gels. That was something that kept me from adding in fuel for a long time because that was kind of what I used to think was the only gel option out there. But there are so many different like textures and thickness and flavors. If you like a thin gel, Goo actually made a Goo liquid gel. That's what I always used on my long run days. It's just like drinking a concentrated sports drink. That was about all I could get down. I couldn't do any of like the Mortons. I tried it. Some of those other things that are a little thicker and harder to get down, but other athletes love them. So if you've only tried one type of gel and you're like, it's not for me, try different ones. There's so many things that you could try. There's so many companies, so many brands. Just start trying new things. And it does take time. You know, if you're new to fueling during runs, start small. You do have to build up glucose transporters in your gut so you can tolerate more fuel. So you can train your gut to tolerate fuel just like you can train your body to tolerate more mileage, but it just takes time. So 75 minutes or more, I do recommend trying to make sure you have something. If it's under 90 minutes, you know, depending on the intensity and who's training, anywhere from like 1 to 2 gels, so maybe a gel at halfway or something like that. If you're training for a marathon, a good race day goal, again, this depends on the person, but typically between 40 and 60 grams of carbs per hour. And for reference, a gel has 20. So trying out different strategies, you know, trying, if you're new to fueling, have one gel per hour your first couple long runs, then try having a gel every 45 minutes and then every 30 minutes, you know, kind of work your way up. But the more that you can take in, the more that your body's able to tolerate, the more of an advantage it will be on race day. So that is another pro to adding in fuel during your runs is that you can practice for race day and it's not going to be anything new or surprising. Okay, the last question for today. This says, I've had an issue with my legs feeling extremely heavy and having a hard time running. It's not a fitness issue. I feel great breath-wise during the run. Do you have any supplements or tips to help this? Cynthia. Cynthia, I was here for a long time in high school, and it ended up being low iron. So one of the first symptoms that I see and look for in athletes is feeling like you have really heavy legs, like you're running through mud. A lot of times that can be related to having low iron. So don't start taking iron. Too high of iron can also cause those symptoms. If you feel like you have that symptom, I do recommend getting some blood work done. A couple other symptoms that might indicate you need some blood work to check your iron would be like you feel dizzy standing up, your hands and feet are always freezing cold, or your legs feel lactic really early in a run, or your legs feel really lactic on an easy run when they shouldn't feel lactic. Those are usually some signs for runners that there's something off with iron. So if that's the case, I do recommend that you try to get in, you know, with a sports medicine doctor who can interpret your labs through a more sports performance friendly lens and ask for a CBC panel, ferritin, total iron, and total iron binding capacity to start with. So those will be really good indicators of iron status. And a lot of times other labs will look fine, but ferritin will be low. And ferritin is sort of the first thing to drop with an early stage iron deficiency. So you do always want to make sure you check ferritin. And you want that to be above 40. So I've had a lot of runners that I've worked with over the years where their doctor has told them everything looks normal and their ferritin is 12, because that's technically in the normal range on their lab sheet. So that's not normal for a runner. Labs should be interpreted differently for runners. So that's just an aside. Make sure you work with a professional who knows how to interpret labs for runners specifically and take symptoms into account. So that's where I would start. The other things that could be causing you to feel like you have heavy legs is not eating enough carbs. if your body doesn't have enough fuel, obviously those carbs, like I've talked about before, is the preferred source of fuel for your body. If you don't have enough carbs, then your body's having to find fuel and make it somewhere else. So for a lot of runners, especially for female runners, that means we're breaking down muscle tissue, which can cause your legs to feel really heavy and fatigued. So eating some more carbs, especially adding in something pre-run, if that's not something you're already doing, again, start small, try something like, you know, a Honey Stinger waffle, a small granola bar, some fruit snacks, some Gatorade, real sugar Gatorade, you know, something like that pre-run, and see if adding more carbs in general, especially pre-run, can help. But also definitely go get some blood work done, especially if you're a high school or college runner. This is a good time to do it because your races won't start really for another month or so. I know some of you are doing indoor, but like the most important races like state meets don't usually start till May. So you have plenty of time to correct any labs that are abnormal. I would not wait until, you know, it's April and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I've been feeling tired for a month. I should probably get my iron checked. Just go ahead and do it now. I think that's something I recommend for all young runners. Just do that as part of your preseason routine. Ask for it for your sports physical. You know, ask your pediatrician about it. Order the labs for you. Have a standing order so you can keep checking those. Definitely just not waiting too long and not kind of suffering through would be my biggest suggestion. All right, that is it for today's Q&A episode. Thank you so much to everybody who submitted questions. If you did not hear your question answered, keep listening. I promise I'm going to get to them. Please keep submitting questions. I'm loving the submissions I've been getting so far. Again, you can either go to my website, www.fuelingforward.com, and go to the podcast tab where you can fill out a question submission form, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you guys again for listening. I hope you tune in next week for a really great episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. You're going to be hearing from my former teammate, Katie Rainsberger. She has a really inspiring story to share about her health journey and her experience as a professional runner. So I hope you guys will tune in next week, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.